Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, words to live by. And the content is made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s.
Today's Words to Live By honors the 19th anniversary of 9/11.
We remember today not only to honor the almost 3,000 innocent souls who lost their lives that day and the other 6,000 people who were injured, but to send an irrefutable message to those who perpetrated this unthinkable crime that we will never forget. And our resolve to continue the fight for freedom will only get stronger. This anniversary should be a time to think about the past, but also to look to the future. Nothing short of our way of life is at stake. But history demonstrates that the American people and our resolve are second to none. We will prevail. Rather than listen to an entire speech, today's Words to Live By contains quotes from President Reagan's remarks about terrorism and strength. Let's start with three quotes from President Reagan's 1981 inaugural address.
Above all, we must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. Our reluctance for conflict should not be misjudged as a failure of will. When action is required to preserve our national security, we will act. We will maintain sufficient strength to prevail if need be, knowing that if we do so, we have the best chance of never having to use that strength.
In January of 1982, during his State of the Union address, President Reagan had this to say about terrorism.
Toward those who would export terrorism and subversion in the Caribbean and elsewhere, especially Cuba and Libya, we will act with firmness. Our foreign policy is a policy of strength, fairness, and balance. By restoring America's military credibility, by pursuing peace at the negotiating table, wherever both sides are willing to sit down in good faith, and by beginning regaining the respect of America's allies and adversaries alike, we have strengthened our country's position as a force for peace and progress in the world.
And during his radio address to the nation on foreign policy on September 24, 1988, President Reagan declared,
"One thing is certain. If we're to continue to advance world peace and human freedom, America must remain strong. We must turn a deaf ear to those born-again patriots who talk about strength while serving up the same old menu of weakness. If we have learned anything these last 8 years, it's that peace through strength works."
More about 9/11 after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles, individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
And now, back to this week's Words to Live By podcast. Every year between 2006 and 2011, the Reagan Foundation hosted a 9/11 Freedom Walk as part of the America Supports You Freedom Walk. It was established in 2005 as a national tradition to reflect on the lives lost on 9/11 and to renew our commitment to freedom, to the values of our country, and to honor our veterans past and present. On September 11, 2011, on the 10th anniversary of that fateful day, the Reagan Library's Freedom Walk included remarks by Rear Admiral Robert Guerriere, commander of the Carrier Strike Group 7. Lieutenant Colonel Tim Karcher, who shared his remarkable story of choosing to live after being severely injured in Iraq. And by Lieutenant John McColl, a New York firefighter, who shared his story about working the search and rescue mission of the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Heroism is not a thing of the past. We see it every day. We saw it loud and clear on 9/11, and we still see it today with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and in our fire and police departments. We are fortunate to have three of those heroes with us today. The first hero I'd like to introduce you to has a special place in our hearts at the Reagan Foundation and Library, for he oversees the USS Ronald Reagan. Rear Admiral Robert Guerriere assumed his duties as commander of the Carrier Strike Group 7 in February of this year. Previously, Admiral Guerriere was the commander of the USS Nimitz, the USS Roosevelt, and the USS Guardian. Ladies and gentlemen, Rear Admiral Guerriere.
Distinguished guests, thank you for inviting me to be here with you on this very special occasion. When I received word of this event and the request to make a few remarks, the answer was yes, for it was both an opportunity and a privilege. An opportunity to share what Ronald Reagan's strike group has been doing. An opportunity to connect what we do with the purpose behind it. An opportunity to take stock in what we're all about as a Navy, as a nation. And also a privilege to make a connection, a very real connection, with those who have served before us, continue to serve today, and have provided the example, both civilians, military, first responders, members of police departments and fire departments. To quote our Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Gary Ruffhead, we honor those lives lost from the tragic events of September 11th, 2001, through the vigilance and service of our sailors and Navy civilians who are on watch around the world today. September 11th, 2011, today, is a day to remember and honor those lost and to stand resolutely with their families and loved ones. As we remember those who were lost in 9/11, we also honor all victims of terrorism. The 10th anniversary is a milestone to acknowledge efforts of putting unprecedented pressure on Al-Qaeda, strengthening our homeland defenses, strengthening our core alliances, and building international partnerships, and contrasting Al-Qaeda's vision of destruction with America's support for peace, security, prosperity, and universal rights around the globe. It's also about acknowledging service. In the aftermath of 9/11, many Americans were compelled to serve across our nation. Of those that joined the Navy after 9/11, there are currently over 217,000 still serving today. They serve with distinction aboard our Navy ships and aircraft, like the Ronald Reagan Strike Group, accompanied by the guided missile cruiser Chancellorsville and the destroyer Preble. They were deployed far forward and returned back home just 48 hours ago, after more than 7 months at sea. It's the people, 5,000 souls that bring a strike group to life, a fusion of technology and talent, the very embodiment of our national will and commitment to freedom, our national treasure. The same national treasure that has answered the call year after year, and what makes us a winning team. Our joint force from the Army, the Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard, our National Guard. The Navy remains postured around the globe, around the clock, projecting power and deterring threats. Our presence promotes security, stability, and prosperity, and this continues unabated today. The 5,000 sailors and Marines assigned to Ronald Reagan's strike group, they steamed across two oceans, countless seas and straits, to contribute to the military operations our Navy stands committed to. The strike group flew combat missions from the North Arabian Sea, supporting our Marines and Army troops on the ground in Afghanistan, contributing our firepower and capability to Operation Enduring Freedom, now in its 10th year following the events of 9/11. The deployment, one in a continuous chain, articulates the same unshakable commitment to vision and a commitment to mission we've witnessed time and time again. 9/11 is also a chance to pay tribute to a generation that has borne the burden of the nation's security during a decade of conflict. The 9/11 generation volunteers to serve in a time of war, upholding virtues of service, sacrifice, and selflessness that have always been the source of America's strength. This generation does honor to those who served before us, to those we often refer to as the greatest generation. And I can tell you, the fire in the greatest generation, that same fire burns as bright today. From freezing temperatures and blizzard conditions at sea, to 110-degree plus temperatures on simmering flight decks, from the hot engine rooms deep in our ships to the skies over contested battlegrounds, and in high-tech spaces packed with humming computers, our sailors and Marines, together with our other joint forces I mentioned earlier, they're getting it done. They don't blink, they perform. And their talent and their ability to fight through amidst adversity carries forward the best of what our country stands for. And I'm pleased to report that young Americans today continue to answer the call. They train hard, they execute tough missions, they adapt, and above all, they prevail. No better friend, no worse enemy. Telling this story, this history is important. It's organizations like the Reagan Library Foundation and Military Connection that plays an important role in preserving this legacy. As they tell the story, they keep us from forgetting, and they honor those who have sacrificed so much. They educate and inspire, and they encourage future leaders to step up, and they remind us to pay it forward. So I want to thank you for inviting us to come together and share this day, as we remember those who lost, those who serve, and the fight that we're committed to until the job is done. So on behalf of the 5,000 strong, I'm privileged to lead in Ronald Reagan's strike group. I want to thank you for your support of our Navy and Marine Corps team. Thank you.
Thank you, Admiral. It is a real privilege to have you here. The second hero I would like to invite to speak is Lieutenant Colonel Tim Karcher. Now, Lieutenant Colonel Karcher was shot in Iraq in 2006. After just 5 months of healing and 7 surgeries, he chose to go back to war. Why? Well, because his unit was fighting over there, and he felt that it was wrong that he wasn't helping. reunited with his troops. Lieutenant Colonel Carter was in Baghdad for the historic transfer of power from the United States to the Iraqis last summer. 10 days later, a bomb struck his vehicle and he lost both of his legs in the explosion. He fought for his life. And you know what he said? This amazing American hero said, and I quote, "Well, you know, life kicks you in the teeth every now and again, and you get to decide how to react to it." Ladies and gentlemen, a true hero, Tim Carter.
Ladies and gentlemen, I greatly appreciate you allowing me to be here with you this evening to remember a time in our country, it's not so distant past, where we were suddenly and brutally attacked by an evil foe. I would be remiss if I did not offer two words of thanks. First, I would like to thank our nation and our citizens for allowing me the privilege to serve. Aside from serving my God and taking care of my own family, serving our nation and defending our freedom is perhaps the most important thing I'll do with my life. Secondly, I'd like to thank all of the Vietnam veterans in our audience today. Our nation learned a great deal from the way you were treated when you returned home. And because of your sacrifice, our current generation of soldiers return home to a grateful nation, just as you should have. This date 10 years ago changed all of our lives in some ways. Most of us can remember our parents or our grandparents telling us where they were or what they were doing when Pearl Harbor was bombed or when John F. Kennedy was shot. It's been said that September 11, 2001 is the Pearl Harbor of our generation. And I dare say that almost all of us can remember where we were and what we were doing the moment that we heard that our great nation had come under attack. For me, I was sitting in a classroom in the U.S. Army's Command and General Staff College, a young major learning the art of war at the operational and strategic levels. I'd been in the Army for about 12 years and had mastered the tactical application of warfare at the platoon and company level as a young infantry officer. In those preceding 12 years, I'd never been called upon to engage our nation's enemies. That all changed for me and most of my fellow service members on September 11, 2001. It's almost as though my military career began that day. Up to that point, everything that I had been done to prepare for the events that followed that life-changing day. From the summer of 2003, I've served three tours in Iraq, planning military operations and conducting counterinsurgency operations in central and southern Iraq. During my second tour in Iraq, I was shot, as John mentioned, and then suffered some more severe injuries in the summer of 2009. This last injury occurred on June 28, 2009, when my patrol was ambushed and my vehicle was struck by a sophisticated roadside bomb designed to penetrate the armor of our vehicles. One of the four projectiles that struck my vehicle that morning penetrated the armor on the front passenger door and destroyed my legs. Were it not for the courage and professionalism of some great soldiers and the skill of our highly trained medical personnel, I'd not be here today. Since that time, I've been recovering and rehabilitating, learning to walk on prosthetic legs, which you saw. It's been an amazing journey, a life-changing journey, and it really started on September 11th. This is only half the story, though. My wife and three daughters had their lives changed as a result of that day also, because it's not just our service members that are making sacrifices. It's also their families. Three times they've said goodbye to me as I went off to war. Twice my family has had their Sunday morning church preparations interrupted with a knock on the door, only to be informed their husband or daddy had been wounded in combat. First time, the report was easy to take. Tim's been shot. He's going to be fine. Second time, though, it was a little more dire. Tim's been severely wounded, and we're not sure if he's going to make it. Our family was turned upside down by months of recovery and rehabilitation. We're still regularly separated based on my rehab and therapy. These sacrifices are very seldom highlighted. Instead, the focus is on the service members. But I can tell you that I am married to a heroine, and our three daughters are incredibly courageous and strong. I tell you the story of our family for the past 10 years to highlight the incredible sacrifices that our military men and women and their families have made during this period. More than 2 million men and women have deployed to combat operations in support of the global war on terror, which began as a result of the attack on our nation 10 years ago. Many of these men and women have deployed multiple times, facing physical danger and family separations, to take the fight to our enemies, preventing them from bringing that fight back to our shores. It is proper that we honor this solemn day, remembering the events of 10 years ago, those that we lost and the sacrifices made since. But we often lose sight of the bright point of that day. While this day marks the 10th anniversary of that tragic attack on our nation, it also marks the 10th anniversary of the day that we truly came together as a nation, when we put others before ourselves and put aside our differences. In honoring those that we lost that day and the sacrifices of so many of our fellow citizens then and since, I challenge each of you to renew in your hearts that passion to serve others in our great nation that we felt that day. Let us never forget the tragedy, but let us also rekindle our patriotism and resilience that we felt that dark day 10 years ago. Again, I thank all of you for allowing me to be here with you tonight. May God bless you all, and may God bless America.
Thank you, Colonel. Thank you for your service. It is an honor to have you at the library with us this evening. Now, this event could not have been possible without the generous support of a lot of people. Because we are so fortunate to have such great sponsors, I'd like to ask you to take a moment when you're here to read through your printed program to give them all the recognition they deserve. Let's give them all a round of applause. I'd like to also give a special heartfelt thank you to today's major sponsor, Pride America, powered by CallSource. Let's give them definitely a round of applause. And now for our last speaker of the day. Lieutenant John McColl, a second generation New York firefighter, worked the World Trade Center rescue mission on 9/11. Describing his arrival at what was left of the Twin Towers that morning, Lieutenant McColl wrote in his book, The Second Towers Down, quote, "As we headed off West Street and touched the edge of the debris, it was like our rubber boots were walking on the edge of a lake, the ashes just getting deeper and deeper. Smoke burned my eyes and nose and throat. Dust stung my eyes too, but was difficult to wipe away with hands that were covered in the stuff. It really did look as though we had arrived at the scene of a nuclear explosion. I guess that's why the government and the media would come to refer to it as Ground Zero." Ladies and gentlemen, another American hero, John McColl.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. I can't describe for you how surprised I was when I received the invitation to come here and speak on the 10th year remembrance of 9/11. And then how happy I became knowing I would have the opportunity to honor my fellow firefighters, both those who survived and those who perished 10 years ago. Immediately after the events of 9/11, after the first week, I wrote a 15-page report, to get it all out of my head to some degree. That report became a book about what happened that day, as well as the weeks and months that followed. That's why I'm here. Whatever the case may be, it is truly my pleasure, and I consider it a privilege to be asked to be here today. Somehow my life was spared that day, 10 years ago. I arrived at Ground Zero about 10 minutes after the second tower had collapsed. But I have no doubt in my mind that if I had been on the scene any earlier, I would have entered the building and I never would have come out again. The last time I counted the friends that I lost that day, it was over 60. The total number of firefighters we lost that day was 343. All of them erased from existence in a brief moment. It is in memory of them and all of those who made the supreme sacrifice that we gather together today. The word anniversary is, of course, used to denote such a landmark in time. Usually people use the word anniversary when they're talking about something happy or something they take joy in remembering. On this anniversary, I choose to celebrate the grit and the greatness I saw during those days. What I recall and what happened was that people stood shoulder to shoulder and demonstrated what it means to pick up the pieces and persist, what it means to be a New Yorker, what it means to be an American. Everyone put their lives on hold and came together at Ground Zero and demonstrated an outpouring of love and care for their fellow man that was and is without parallel. Later, we were joined by people from all over the world. These volunteers were of all races, creeds, and colors. They came together as one. It all became very real for me at about the third day. It was a Thursday night, and that led into a Friday morning. I had been at the site all night long, and the sun was coming up. We had spent the night recovering the dead that we could find. I was heading for home up to the bus on West Street, walking up West Street, and there was an army of people that were coming towards me. I could hardly walk up the street. And they were carrying shovels and buckets and rakes, and they had this look in their eye, you know, and they weren't going to be stopped. And they were all there to help. It was just very emotional for me. I was overcome with emotion. I hadn't cried yet, as there hadn't been any time to do so. But at that moment, I could no longer hold back the tears. And I wept openly as I walked up West Street and felt some relief for the first time since the tragedy had struck. Speaking of relief, I want to bring up a sensitive topic, the toxic exposure to everyone who participated in the rescue and cleanup efforts of 9/11. As the weeks and months passed, I watched as many of my fellow firefighters and civilians who helped out develop health issues of varying degree. It was this that inspired me to do the following. I wrote in my book about my attempts to have a facility brought into New York City that administers a unique detox method to help people like those exposed at Ground Zero. The company I'm referring to was based out here in the West Coast. It goes by the name of HealthMed. And the technique that they use, the technique of this particular detox, are based on using a sauna, which has been used throughout history. My efforts eventually paid off, and the guys from the West Coast came to New York, set up a clinic, and to date have run over 1,000 first responders through this program, totally free to all first responders, I might add, with much success to all those who have participated. I believe this type of detox regimen would be immensely helpful in treating our veterans returning from overseas who have had toxic exposure issues, and so I'm a firm advocate of the phrase, something can be done about it, and something should be done about it. In closing, I'd like to say it has been an honor to be able to speak on behalf of my fallen comrades. Thank you for your prayers of support, and God bless each and every one of you. Thank you.
Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, "America has already succeeded where so many other historic attempts at freedom have failed. Already, we've made this cherished land the last best hope of mankind. It's up to us, in our generation, to carry on the hallowed task. It is up to us, however we may disagree on policies, to work together for progress in humanity so that our grandchildren, when they look back on us, can truly say that we not only preserved the flame of freedom, but cast its warmth and light further than those who came before us." Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, or more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.